All right. Well, we're going to get into, of course, lesson two tonight. And last time, of course, we did more of an introduction of the book, and we really, you know, we looked at kind of those first few verses where it tells us about this book is about instruction and wisdom, right? Not the kind of wisdom where, you know, we know a lot of things or we know a lot about a lot of things. Actually, here in a couple of classes, we're going to talk about the heart of the wise, and kind of spoiler alert for that, you know, the wise are actually humble. Actually, you know, are the ones who know that they don't know everything. And so we're not talking about that kind of wisdom, but rather what those verses, at least in the ESV, call wise dealing or wise behavior. You think about some of those cousin words that are there, like prudence and discretion and things like that. So this is about wisdom and navigating life, making decisions with righteousness and justice and all of those spiritual qualities that are mentioned. It starts with the fear of the Lord. Remember, chapter 1, verse 7 is kind of a theme verse for the whole book, really, where he says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And he says, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, actually, in chapter 9. So it starts with the fear of the Lord. Remember, we said that, you know, it's not like fear of the Lord is like this one little piece of our relationship, but I think it's more kind of represents our entire relationship with God. And we'll see more of that tonight, kind of a fuller picture of what that relationship looks like, the relationship the wise have with the Lord. We talked about different sections of the book, and we're going to get into like that 1 through 9 section tonight, which is kind of structured as like a father who, of course, Solomon's the one writing as the father communicating to a son. And we're going to get into that, at least the first 4 chapters tonight, which may be ambitious, but we'll do our best on that. I think there's a slide on the class schedule. I think that's in the lesson material, as well as the goals. Those should be in the lesson material as well. Just want to, you know, as we're going through, we'll try to come back to these often, but just, you know, keep these written down or keep these handy, just to think about these as we go through. Really, I'm sure there's some applicability for all of them in every class. I would say probably like 3 and 4 tonight will be especially applicable. So if you want to focus on those, but again, have the entire list handy throughout the class. I think that will be helpful. All right, so class tonight, again, we're going to try to cover all 4. Won't cover every verse, of course, but chapter 1, we're going to really focus on the dangers of rejecting wisdom. Chapter 2, we're really going to look at the value of wisdom and everything that chapter says about that. Chapter 3, the blessings of wisdom. And then chapter 4, where the father is really just stressing the relationship with wisdom that he wants his son to have. So that'll try to be the focus of each chapter. All right, so let's jump into chapter 1 and talk about the dangers of rejecting wisdom. I'm actually going to start in verse 20. Chapter 1 and verse 20, and I'm going to start reading there. Proverbs 1 verse 20 says, wisdom cries aloud in the street, in the markets she raises her voice. At the head of the noisy streets she cries out, at the entrance of the city gates she speaks. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. Because I have called and you refuse to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one has heeded, because you have ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. When terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. would have none of my counsel and despised all my reproof. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. So we talked about, you know, on Sunday, kind of one of the poetic devices being personification, where some of these non-human things or ideas kind of take on human characteristics. And that's really what's going on here, right? You have wisdom, you know, picked it as a woman, and she's calling out. You see some of her human characteristics through here, like laughing and mocking and things like that. But she's calling out, and she mentions a few groups of people. She mentions, you know, scoffers and fools. Obviously, scoffers, those who, you know, would be mocking wisdom. We already saw the fools are those who despise wisdom. She is calling out to those. So maybe there's a lesson there that can someone, you know, leave that category of foolish people if they begin with the fear of the Lord? I think they can, but in general, that category of people, by nature, they despise wisdom. But she also calls out to the simple ones. If you remember, the simple, those were one of the groups that Solomon was, one of his, the groups he was speaking to in the first few verses of chapter one, right? About giving prudence to the simple. I mean, they're one of the target groups of this book. And so perhaps they're the ones that are kind of at this decision point here. You know, maybe it's best to think about simple people, or those who are being called simple here as those really without any kind of direction in life. Probably those who are, you know, easily influenced. And so she's calling out to those, people as well. And so what's the danger here, of rejecting wisdom? Well, she says it starts with continuing as they are, right? She says, how long, O simple ones, will you love being simple, or fools despising knowledge, or scoffers scoffing? So the danger is that if you continue, you know, as you are and don't listen to what I have to say, reject wisdom, look at what's going to come upon them. She brings up calamity and terror. She brings up distress and anguish. And if, you know, think about someone today who is easily influenced by every idea or ideology or opinion that's out there today. Do you think that would be stressful? I mean, of course it would, right? As someone who is just tossed about with every opinion and whim that they hear. So distress and anguish will come upon them. It says wisdom will not answer. It's interesting how that's put there in verse 28. They'll call upon me, but I won't answer. They'll seek me, but I won't find me. And I take that as, you know, they're calling out to her because they don't like what's come upon them. They don't like the calamity and the terror. It's not that they fear the Lord now or anything like that, but they just, you know, they don't like the consequences of what's come upon them. And so they're crying out. She says, because they did not choose the fear of the Lord, they will not answer. Also mentions they're killed or destroyed. So you know, these are all the things that can come upon the simple if they, you know, choose to continue as they are. Do you think there are people today who enjoy being simple or in having no direction in life? I think there certainly are, right? Probably, you know, a lot of young people probably fit that category, and others too, that enjoy having no direction and being what this passage would call simple. And the Father's saying that there's danger in that, right? Look at what can come upon you. So mentions the calamity and terror. What is that? Well, I'm sure it has a lot to do with the evil that he starts out with here. If you go back to the section just before this, starting in verse 10, the very first thing that the Father stresses to the Son is about this enticement of sinners, right? And we're not going to read this whole section, but, you know, if you've read it already or if you want to skim through it, just look at the wickedness in what they're enticing him to do, right? To let us lie in wait for blood, ambush the innocent, swallow them alive. It just sounds so wicked, the things that they're trying to get him to do. They try to entice him with wealth, right? That's kind of like what they're dangling out in front of him, right? Is let's enjoy this plunder. We'll all have one purse, one kind of jackpot. They're appealing to his sense of wealth. And the father says that all that's going to lead to is they're just going to be walking into their own trap, right? Kind of uses this analogy of if there's an animal, if you're setting a trap and the animal sees you set the trap, it's probably not going to be very effective, right? Well, these men are walking into something that should be obvious, but they still walk right into their own trap. They're walking into what is an obvious result. And he says, such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Isn't that so true about greed and just how much it can consume us and consume our sense of peace and justice? These men have lost all sense of that, and their greed has completely consumed them. So in that sense, their life has been taken away. And the father's instruction to him, kind of behind on my PowerPoint here, the father's instruction is, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. Okay, so obviously great wisdom for us there. This enticement of sinners is there. The best thing for us to do is to just not even come close to that. Don't walk. Don't associate with them. And good parenting advice for us too in teaching our kids.
Hey, Jay.
Pause there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the things that makes me think about is we can find ourselves there whenever we think, oh, no, I've got this and I'm really going to do it my way. And somebody else might be trying to give us some guidance or some instruction, and we have that mentality of, no, I'm content with what I have already observed. I'm content with what I already know about this situation, and I'm not really open to hearing anybody else's input about how I'm going to handle this. It's almost like walking up and seeing a moving truck, and you see a couple guys are going to try to like just deadlift a piano. And you say, hey, do y'all want to use a dolly on that? Or do you want another hand on that? Like, no, we got this. Like, we're fine. And,
right.
And there is that naive foolishness of thinking that you're the only one that has any experience there. And like when I put it in those terms, then I find myself guilty of this way too often.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. And we're going to talk, I think it's chapter 3, where he talks about be not wise in your own eyes. Because often we so often want to do that, right? We tend to think we know what to do. And like you said, I mean, we've talked a lot about wisdom already and will tonight, but one of the, I think, ways that we seek wisdom or hold on to wisdom is by the things that others tell us, right? I mean, it's God's word, certainly, but, it's the things our parents teach us, or maybe another mentor or someone who has had influence on us. We got to hold on to the things that they tell us, right, and lean on their experiences and their wisdom. I think, the Lord is the source of wisdom, but sometimes it's through other people that we learn his wisdom and what he has to teach. So, Christy, go ahead.
I was just going to mention on the topic about greed, this has really been on my mind lately, too, because so often I see people in different situations who put so much focus on things that they forget how it's affecting people, and they're more concerned about things than even their own family or others. And it's just so sad to see how they are blinded by their own actions or their own desires and how it really does take their life.
That's right. That's right. That's well said. Yeah. It's, greed is one of those sins that just, it can lead to so many other sins, so many other sinful attitudes, right? Like we see with these men. I mean, these men have lost all, compassion and justice and peace and all sense of that, right? And so you're right. Yeah, it can completely consume us and lead to so many other sinful attitudes and sinful acts. So in light of this, so dangers of rejecting wisdom, he's warned him about the enticement of sinners, and he saw the call of wisdom and says, look, if you stay simple or fools, you continue to despise knowledge or scoffers scoffing, you know, it's going to be calamity and terror and death and destruction. In light of all that, as we move into chapter two, what does the father tell the son to do here at the beginning of chapter two?
Just store up
his commandments. He says, treasure up my commandments, make your ear attentive, right? All these, he's urging him to listen to what he has to say, right? Call out for insight, raise your voice. And in verse 4, you know, he's talking about all those things he's saying, right? Commandments and wisdom, to seek it like silver, right? Search for it as hidden treasure. So, you know, those are great metaphors there. That you know, ought to communicate to us just how valuable these should be to us, right? And because they're valuable, you know, how much effort and time should be put into to seeking them and searching for them, which is interesting because is wisdom trying to make itself hard to find? I mean, look at what we just saw the woman wisdom in the last chapter. I mean, she's in the streets, right? And she's calling out saying, you know, listen to what I have to say. So while it does take some seeking and some effort, some searching, because it's so valuable, it's not like we can't throw up our hands and say, I just don't think it's something that's attainable, right? Something that can be found, but because it's so valuable, we ought to just pursue it like there's nothing more valuable in the world. So he says, seek it like silver, search for it as hidden treasures. And then what will be the result of that in the verses just after that?
It brings you to God.
Yeah, it brings you closer to God, right? Yeah, verse 5. If you seek the wisdom like silver and search for it like treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God, right? We already said, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So you have kind of wisdom and the fear of the Lord are just these inseparable things. And so if you're seeking wisdom, well, guess what you're going to find? You're going to discover more about God and who he is. So what are some of the things you guys see here about what can we learn about God in some of these verses just after verse 5?
I think the key one for me is what it says there in verse 6, that mm-hmm. the Lord gives wisdom. So he is the source. You know, we can picture this conversation happening maybe differently, a father to the son. The father could claim wisdom based on his own experience and own life. Maybe that's true. It's interesting here. That's not what he does. He doesn't say, you should listen to this wisdom because it's based on my experience mm-hmm. or the collective experience of others, or this is how people have, you know, successfully understood how to get along in life. He points it directly to God as a source of wisdom and who's dueling this out. And as Philip mentioned, it's free for all of us. So this instruction comes father to a son, that it really could come from anyone of any age that truly understands what he's saying here. The beginning of understanding is fearing God and seeking the wisdom that he has to offer. It's very powerful here that the source is exclusively from the Lord.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well said. Yeah, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the irony is Rehoboam, who is Solomon's son, doesn't look to God for his answers. He right. goes to his colleagues, you know, his age group.
That's right. Makes
a major decision on, he doesn't go to God, he goes to people who lack wisdom.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And, you know, the Lord is the source of wisdom. That it certainly can come from, you know, other people, whether that be parents or you know, others who may mentor us in some way, but But yeah, like you said, Blaine, it's not like he's saying, let me tell you about this time, son, where this happened, right? He's pointing all back to the Lord, and how he's the true source. James, go ahead. Do you have your virtual hand raised?
Yeah. So I was wondering in verses 20 and 21, when it talks about wisdom crying out, mm-hmm. we talked about the effort that an individual has to make to obtain this wisdom and receive it. But she's crying out, and there's other noises out there. So there's competing ideas that Paula just mentioned. I think the same thing. So there is a greater effort that's needed, because there is some, as we mentioned last time, there's other information out there that is false. There's other information that is not wise. It sounds like it's wise, but it's not. And she is raising her voice, and she has to, because there's other things going out there, and we have to, as you mentioned, have the kind of heart. We have to do some, we have to and weigh things. So there's a lot that just, we have to take in. We know things, particularly come from the Lord, outweighs everything. And so if you don't start there, and that's where it is, when it doesn't start there, then it's just going to fail. But the other competing voices, the other noises out there, it sounds pretty, it's tantalizing. It sounds even logical a lot of times how you should respond or do things. But at the end of the day, it's always the wisdom that comes from above. And that's a hard thing to do when there's a lot of competing voices out there that you really have to discipline yourself. That's the word I'm looking for. To just say, I'm going to hold on to what God says. And not let go of it and let these other things just blow in the wind.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. And we're really going to see that in chapter 9, right, where this woman, Wisdom, she comes back again and she's calling out again. But then there's this woman, Folly, right? So, you know, she's kind of like her counterpart. And she's calling out too, for she said, you know, calling out to the simple, come in here, right? And so like you said, there's other voices, and the father kind of closes this section telling his son that, like, look, woman Wisdom's calling here, woman Folly's calling here, you know, you need to choose. And that kind of goes along with kind of a theme in the whole book about, look, there's two paths. You know, look at what comes of this path, some of the blessings that we'll talk about tonight, but then look at, you know, the end results of this path. And so, you know, as he's going to put that in front of him, and it should be an easy choice, though we know not everybody makes that choice. So yeah, I like what you said there about her raising her voice. You know, a lot of it has to be because there are other voices out there. So thank you for bringing that up. Did I miss someone? I see a couple chats, but it's hard for me to see these on time. Oh yeah. Amen, James. Yeah, that was well said. So it leads us to this understanding of the Lord. He's the source of wisdom. He talks about how he guards the paths of justice and watches over way of his saints. And, I'm sure I could ask some of you guys on this call who have been, you know, seeking after wisdom for many, many years. You know, in doing that, have you started to greater understand or appreciate how God, say, watches over his saints? I would imagine you'd probably say yes. I mean, I know, for myself, maybe I didn't always understand that or appreciate that when I was a young Christian, but as time goes on, if you're seeking this wisdom as you ought to, you'll understand how God does things like this, watches over the way of his saints and guards the paths of justice. So again, that pursuit can lead us to a greater understanding of who God is and the things that he does. There's a greater understanding of spiritual principles as well. It talks about, then you will understand, verse 9, then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity in every good path, right? And so we get to this point where we have this greater understanding of these, of course, rich spiritual ideas, that we see in the scriptures. Philip, did you have your hand raised?
I was going to make a comment about 12 and 16, but maybe you're still going there.
Yes. We'll get there just a moment.
Sorry.
Wisdom, knowledge, discretion, and understanding. So some of those, you know, ability to navigate through life will have that as well. making wise decisions. And then I'll go ahead and ask, so starting kind of 12 and then the rest of the chapter, what seems to be the emphasis in that text about the value of wisdom, starting in verse 12 through the rest of the chapter? What does wisdom do
to me? It just seems, yeah, it seems to be that compliment to the shield, that it's deliverance.
Yeah,
the
right.
New American Standard uses the phrase deliver in verse 12 and verse 16, and I guess I just hung around Marty enough to start picking up on repeated phrases.
That's right. Yeah. So he really seems to emphasize this, how wisdom can deliver us from evil. He mentions wicked men. He mentions the forbidden woman or adulteress. We'll talk more about her, Philip will, on Sunday. But I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on this. Like, how do you think that wisdom delivers us from evil? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it helps us avoid those paths, you know, to be alert and see the red flags so that we don't take those routes.
Yeah, that's right. You know, think about the things we just kind of looked at, how we come to a greater understanding of who God is, and we have a greater understanding of righteousness and justice and equity and all those things. Do you think that enticement of sinners is going to feel as strong if we understand those things better? I don't think so, right? I don't think that if people come along and they entice us with these greedy propositions, that those calls are just not going to be as enticing, right? If we have come to this greater understanding of who God is and these spiritual ideas, and we put on discretion and understanding and all the things we've led up to this with. And also, like in verse 20, we'll walk in the way of the good and keep to the path of the righteous, right? So how can it deliver us from evil? Well, you know, we're walking on this other path, right? So if we're walking on this path and we're pursuing the things, you know, for our own spiritual well-being and spiritual growth, well, you know, it's just not going to be as enticing over there, right? We're going to avoid it with all of our might and all of our effort. So I'll stop there. Any other, I guess, thoughts on chapter 2 or the value of wisdom discussed here?
I think I might mention that we're not discounting God's providence, in which, through means that we really can't explain, he may guard our way and keep us in the path of right. We're to trust him that he'll not allow us to be tempted beyond what we're able. So God, I don't discount God's direct influence in our life. However, the primary way in which God guards us from problems is by putting up signs, by telling us there's danger ahead. Mm-hmm. The highway department preserves us from falling into one of these potholes sometimes or a big bump, putting up a sign that says bump ahead or something. Mm-hmm. And so we are guarded when we observe the warnings that have been given us. And that certainly suggested, I think, back in the second chapter there, when he speaks about God giving wisdom. Mm-hmm. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. These things are written in the scriptures. So studying the scriptures and heeding them is one of the ways God preserves and keeps us from trouble.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, verse 7 right there where you were reading, he is a shield to those who walk in integrity, right? So the idea of protecting us from those things. And
he guards the path of the justice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well said.
Jake, I just build on that really quickly. It's always interesting to me, the time to develop this knowledge and wisdom is before the emergency happens, right? Mm-hmm. We often get in these crisis situations and then we're kind of dialing 911, looking for the knowledge and wisdom that God was offering us all along. I think about Jesus, even at a very young age, in the temple, studying, teaching, and then later when he's met with the temptations and Satan makes some pretty compelling argument, even misusing scripture to try and convolute what God would have Jesus to do. But Jesus knows, based on knowledge and study and his wisdom, the right answer is to answer Satan in that situation. So there's an example how wisdom, understanding, knowledge of what God really says and what he would like us to do helped even Jesus in a difficult time and delivered him from a great adversity.
Yeah, that's a good point about being prepared for that. Because, yeah, it's like those in the section we read in chapter 1, right, where they're calling out to wisdom while all the calamities around them, well, you know, it's too late at that point, right? But that was a good example in Jesus, and now he was ready for those temptations, and, you know, that really can serve as a shield and a guard for us, you know, like using some of the language we've seen here in this chapter.
Let me piggyback off of that too.
Yeah.
Well, and so in Jesus' case, what was crying out to him was his flesh may want to do something else. And, you know, particularly in the turning the bread, the stones to bread. And I think that's probably one of, yes, there's other wisdom that's out there and these other things, but our flesh craves things that are not spiritual, things that are not God-led. And that's when we start listening to the flesh in a lot of things. And as we look through this, it is the flesh that is calling out to react and to behave and to stimulate themselves in certain ways. And so the wisdom from above speaks to our spirit that we should take control of that flesh and not listen to it. So that's another voice that is calling us that we compete with every day.
Yeah, that's a good point. And yeah, and we'll see here in chapter 3, where when he says, be not wise in your own eyes, he immediately follows that with turn away from evil, right? Because often what's wise in our own eyes often is something evil or associated with evil, right? When those fleshly desires kind of, you know, that becomes our wisdom, right? I need this for my own desires. So yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up. Deliverance from evil, as we mentioned. I'm going to move into chapter 3, where the focus really seems to be on the blessings of wisdom. And, you know, just like in chapter 2, where we called it the value of wisdom, really our relationship with God was at the center of that. And the same way in chapter 3, our relationship with God is really at the center of these blessings as well. The Father, he instructs the Son, encourages the Son at the beginning of chapter 3 and verse 5 to trust in the Lord. Probably a passage that we've seen quoted a lot. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. Well, what does that mean to trust in the Lord? Well, it starts with be not wise in your own eyes, right? We have a tendency to think we have things figured out, and usually it's a lot of you know, self-centeredness or self-interest that's involved in what we think is wise, or it can be something fleshly desires, like you mentioned, James. But it says, be not wise in your own eyes. Instead, fear the Lord. Instead, think about who God is and you know, who we are before him, and turn away from evil. What are some of the, he mentions a blessing associated with it, right, in verse 8. Fear the Lord, turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. You know, much of Proverbs is figurative, certainly, and I think there's some figurative language here. You know, can turning away from evil have some physical benefits for us? Well, it certainly can, right? Keep us from things that could harm us physically. So I think that's part of it. But I think there's some figurative language here as well about the healing and refreshment that it can bring to us. What are some of the in the rest of the chapter, he gives what I think are some really practical things about trusting in the Lord. What are some of the things you see here in the rest of the chapter or in the next few verses here about trusting in the Lord?
Hey, so one of my favorite things about chapter 3 goes back to a question you asked in chapter 2 about how is God protecting us? Mm-hmm. One of the ways God is protecting us is by giving us the genuine things that really are meaningful, so that like the counterfeit is less attractive. When we have the real blessings that chapter 3 describes, then when the woman of folly is offering us the temporary or the counterfeit, then it's like, why would I trade what I already have in the Lord for that? Because we've gotten to like kind of that taste and see that the Lord is good kind of thing.
That's right, yeah. And then when you get into kind of the one-liner Proverbs, you get a lot of that, like, this better than gold or silver, right? So all these things that men and the foolish would want, I mean, you have something so much better. So, Christy, yes. Did you have a hand raised? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say, I think that oftentimes we see the word trust and we think of the word hope. But to me, when I see this and just what I've been through in my own life, I've learned that it's more not only a consultation, but it's a deep reliance, a dependence on the Lord. You know, it's so much deeper than just a hope. It's like your life is depending completely on it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen here, right? But I'm just depending on God because of who he is to take care of me, right? So look at some of these things. He says, it talks about honoring the Lord with your wealth. Does that require some trust? Well, certainly, right? I mean, he mentions with the first fruits of all your produce, and, you know, we may not have as good of an understanding of that, but you can imagine the Israelites that, you know, when they're patient and they wait for the crops, and then when the first crops or first fruits come, they take that and give that to the Lord. Well, they don't know how much they're going to have that year, right? I mean, they don't know how much is going to come after that. So you can think about the level of trust that would be required for them to give that back to the Lord. And you know, obviously there's lessons for us there in honoring the Lord with our wealth and giving back to him. And I think it includes, you know, being generous to others as well and doing the things with our wealth that God would have us to do. And what does it say that the blessing will be if we do that, if we trust him and give of some of our means? Well, it says your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. So maybe part of the trust here is we don't always know how that happens. You know, like if I give some money, am I going to get some money back into my account? Well, no. But he says, look, if you trust in God, honor him with the things that you have, that he's going to provide, right? That's the blessing that we have. He also talks about accepting his discipline. Does that require trust to accept discipline from someone, you know, to accept that they, have your best interest at heart? Certainly, right? And so we accept his discipline. What is the Lord's discipline? I'm taking it in this passage to be kind of the discipline or the reproof that we can get from his word and how it ought to change us and correct us. But it says that, you know, if the Lord disciplines us, what does that mean we can know about him? Well, he means that he loves us, right? So his discipline means that he loves us. He also mentions, this is later on in the chapter, about confidence in him when facing evil. So all these things really, I think, are some really practical ways in which the wise trust in the Lord, okay, with the things they have, the way they accept his discipline, and they have confidence in him when facing evil. The rest of the chapter here, so really starting in 13 through much of the rest of this, is really just a bunch of blessings of wisdom just kind of thrown at us. Checking my time here, 7:40. And I just put them up here, and if you guys want to just maybe look at these for a few seconds and let me know maybe what you see here, maybe if you see like, if you can group these together, or maybe just what your overall impressions or summary of some of these things are. Love to get thoughts from you guys.
Hey, Jay.
Yes.
Vera. Hey. Sure. One of the things I noticed is in, you know, verses 19 through, I guess, 20, well, maybe as far as 21, but the fact that the Lord has all three, it's three prongs. The Lord himself has wisdom, and it says he founded the earth. And then by understanding, he established the heavens. And then by his knowledge, the depths were broken up and clouds dropped down the dew. And so it just says to me that I need all three of those things too. And the fact that he has them should, mm-hmm. I guess, should make me want to go to him more, because he knows all of this. He understands it all. His wisdom is there. So anytime there's this, you know, some situations we bring on ourselves and some we don't. The ones we bring on ourselves, sometimes we don't understand. And we definitely don't understand the ones we don't create. Mm-hmm. So I think it takes his wisdom, and then the fact that I know he knows already. Then I know you mentioned earlier in one of your other slides about the comfort we should get from that. So I just kind of recognize a lot of that, you know, those scriptures.
Yeah, that's like what you said there. And yeah, I mean, is there any doubt about the Lord being the source of wisdom? I mean, wisdom was there with him in the very beginning, right? It was right there with him in creation. Right. So Solomon didn't invent wisdom. You know, it's not something that came along somewhere. I mean, this was with the Lord in the very beginning. So, you know, he is the source of that. And, you know, like you said, I mean, it can only mean that we need it more than anything in the world, right?
Right. And it's sort of how we say to our girls all the time, don't learn all your lessons the hard way. There's been some examples somewhere that you can use. So.
Right. Yeah. Thinking about the list here, I see value. So obviously, you know, better than silver, better than gold, more precious than jewels. I mean, wisdom is valuable, right? Think about when God asked Solomon, or he said, I'll give you anything you want. You know, talk about a test of what's most important to somebody. When God says, I'll give you anything you want. And he chose wisdom, right? And if you remember what he said, you know, I'm just a little child. I don't know what I'm doing here. I can't figure this out on my own. And so realizing who he was, and realizing who God was, and, you know, look, I don't know how to govern these people without you, God. And so he needed the discretion and the wisdom. And I think Solomon knew that everything else would kind of take care of itself. But wisdom was the thing that was most important. Obviously, we see life here. We see long life, tree of life for your soul. Life is kind of an interesting word in Proverbs, really in all of the scriptures, because it's used in so many different ways. You know, you can life and death physically, life and death, you know, spiritually, and you're dead in sin and alive to God. And I think a lot of times Proverbs is even talking about, like, quality of life when it says life. So I think we have to kind of think about context when we think about what life, what he's talking about. But I think it's even, if I'm not mistaken, the Hebrew word for life even is used for, like, flowing water or running water or something like that. So something that's fresh like that, the word life can kind of has that meaning as well. But we see life. I see peace as well. So peaceful paths, pleasantness. I mean, are we not going to have peaceful relationships with others, right? Is that going to be one of the blessings of wisdom? Our sleep will be sweet. So, you know, not only peace with others, but a peace of mind, a peace that, you know, passes understanding, as Philippians would say. We can rest well at night. This idea of favor in the sight of God and man. So, you know, think about people like Joseph and Daniel, great examples of living out Proverbs. And you remember, they were looked upon pretty highly by those who were in really high positions. And I think Proverbs is teaching us, if we're living like this, that we're going to be looked at favorably by our fellow man. So we'll be, you know, good employees, good teammates, good classmates. We'll find favor with those who are around us. Won't be loved by every single person, but generally we'll get along and others will find favor with us. All right, I'm going to move to chapter 4. So I was going to kind of use this chapter as somewhat of a review, as he kind of just goes through several things about the relationship with wisdom. I think he touches on the dangers again. He urges him to avoid that path, you know, keep hold of instruction, avoid that path, turn away from it. In verse 19, the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. So we saw that in chapter 1 about the calamity and terror that comes upon them. It urges him to just avoid it. Don't even come close to that path. In verse 23, a verse we probably are familiar with, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Okay, so vigilance is kind of the idea that there are dangers out there, and we know that, right? There is that enticement out there. So, you know, we need to protect our hearts, because as the proverb says, as Jesus teaches us in the Gospels, that what comes into our heart is that's what's going to come out, right? So we need to be vigilant with what we allow to come into our heart. He stresses to him again about the value of wisdom. You know, he says, get wisdom, get insight. I love his wording there, just get wisdom. He says, the beginning of wisdom is this. So to me, he's saying, you know, the wisest thing you can do is to get wisdom. And whatever you get insight, right? Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She'll place on your head a graceful garland and bestow on you a beautiful crown, right? So he's really stressing to him how valuable that, and the kind of relationship he needs to have with wisdom. Hold on to her. Don't let her go. Yeah, Philip?
So, I mean, you look at, like you said, this is kind of a good summary of this first section. I don't think that we realize how many days in our life we're operating based on the principles of this book. Those of us that have grown up with it or that are familiar with it, and if we could step outside of our own life for a moment and think about what a life would look like if you were unfamiliar with these foundational principles of wisdom, it's a sad picture. And that was really startling to me last week in a study with a student that has come to Christ later in their years. And I just mentioned like Proverbs 15 verse 1 about a soft, you know, a gentle answer turns away wrath. That was something they had never heard in their whole life. And it just got a pain in my chest a little bit to think, like, you've lived this many decades and you've never even seen this quilted on a pillow, or not, like, they just didn't know. And when you think about the rewards of wisdom, this relationship the Father is urging us to have with wisdom, I mean, these are principles that for a lot of us, they're almost second nature. But if we sat down and counted up how many times in our life that we're really using these, it's constantly.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, I'll finish with this. I wanted to emphasize, you know, here at the beginning of chapter 4, where the Father, and he said it all throughout, really at the beginning of all these chapters, about urging the Son to be attentive, listen to what I'm saying, right? For I give you good precepts, do not forsake my teaching. You know, in chapter 1, he describes the teaching of the Father and Mother as graceful garland for your head, pendants for your neck. And so, let's don't underestimate that teaching that we have from our parents. And if it wasn't our parents, maybe someone else who taught us these things, because I think that's where that comes from. Philip, I kind of like, these are just second nature to us, and we don't even maybe know where that proverb is, but they've been taught to us from a young age. I know not for all of us, but maybe someone else later in life, you know, taught us these things. And don't cast aside those things. I'll speak for my generation, since it's the one I'm the most familiar with. I think we are quick to just take the things our parents taught us and just throw them away, you know, in the spirit of, I guess, pursuing our own faith, which is important, but we can do that and still hold the things that they taught us really close to us, right? Because we need that wisdom and that foundation that we receive. So that's kind of my last exhortation and
thought for
you guys. Yeah.
I do like with verse 23, where Solomon says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life. And we know that David had to have trained Solomon in so much of what he learned through his life. And I like that if you flip over to Psalm 119:11, you know, David said, your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you. So it's so important that what's in our heart is what comes out of our mouths, you know. And I just see David and Solomon here and how important the heart and the mind and, you know, everything is. So I just like those two verses together.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that out. You're right, because all throughout the scriptures we see that what's in your heart is going to come out eventually. So we have to make sure we guard what comes in there, right? And fill it up with the things that we should fill it up with, right? Because it's so consequential for us, the things that come in there, they're gonna come out.
Yeah, it's been interesting to me that in 4:3 he said, when I was my father's son, he taught me get wisdom. And consequently, when he was asked by God what he would choose, he chose wisdom. I don't know if he was following his father's instruction or what, but it's not wasted time when we as parents teach our children to get wisdom.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's certainly a lesson we can take from this you know, as a father, I look at what he's saying and just the way he's just impressing upon him the importance of this, you know, and you think about the things like our children and those who look up to us and those that we are examples for. Maybe the thing that that impresses on them the most is the thing that we value the most, the things that are most important. Like our kids can see that, others can see what's most important to me. And so, not just in the things that we say, but the things we do as well. Let's make sure our kids and those around us know that, you know, this is how much we care about God's wisdom and seeking after it. And so we can encourage them to do that as well. So I'll close with this. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. So, you know, we talked about this kind of two path image. Ponder the, you know, what path your feet are on. I think the rest of the book is going to show clearly that it's the wise path that leads to life and honor and riches and all the things that we talked about. So I got 7:55, so I guess we'll call it there. So so thanks everyone. We'll pick up. Philip will pick up and we'll look at chapters 5 through 7, I believe. On